This episode of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast is brought to you by Pop of Color Podcast. Pop of Color Podcast is the top destination for Black female voices in podcasting. Pop of Color Podcast was released in 2017. It was the first interactive digital directory featuring more than 100 voices of Black women in podcasting with the Pop of Color Podcast hashtag bringing together a community. You can go to popofcolorpodcast.com to explore those voices in every area from health and wellness to spirituality to comedy. There's a podcast for everyone there, so definitely check it out. popofcolorpodcast.com. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping into the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist. I'm Ayana Angel, and I'm your host, as well as Life According to Her creator and chief encourager. If you are familiar with the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast, and you like what you've heard so far, definitely help a girl out and leave a review. Give us a comment. Tell us how you like the show. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, where we always play, be sure to get down with us at Life According to Her on IG. Don't miss out on our must reads over at lifeaccordingtoher.com as well. And now let's get into the show. On today's show, we're chatting with Nicole Garner Scott. Nicole is the owner of the high-profile event planning, fashion, and lifestyle public relations and marketing agency, the Garner Circle PR. This author, instructor, and practitioner has asserted herself as an authority in the world of publicity and branding, having worked with notable celebrities like Sierra and big box brands like Adidas. She is a true sweetheart, and as a result, she also enjoys giving back to her community as well as helping her fellow entrepreneurs by having founded 100 Female Entrepreneurs, which is a business league for females in entrepreneurship. So ladies, if you are ready to take some action, make some changes, get your notepad out, get your notebook out, get your journal out, wherever you write the most powerful information that you are ready to consume and receive, because Nicole is going to drop so much knowledge on us. Let's get into it. Let's go ahead and welcome Nicole to this show. Thank you so much for joining us, Nicole.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So I know you, so the audience give you a little background. I know Nicole from her PR days. So this was like years ago, I think, when we first met, when I was still in New York. And I think it was when you did the It Girl brunch in Harlem. When we first actually met.
Yep. Yeah. That's some years.
So that just goes to show you how long people are working on the things that they're doing and developing things before you might actually hear about them and know of them. They're working, okay? So like I said, I know you from PR days. So can you share with our audience a bit more about yourself and your career path?
Sure. So PR, definitely my first love. That is my agency, the Garner Circle PR, and have been doing that for 12 years now. So we probably met a good six years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been doing this for 12 years. And then recently in the last 2 or 3 years, I kind of expanded more into the world of serial entrepreneurship. So I launched 100 Female Entrepreneurs Business League, and then I also opened a co-working space for women in Atlanta, Georgia, called Open for Business.
Wow, that is amazing. So what made you want to open a co-working space? And also, how is the market for co-working spaces in Atlanta?
Well, I actually started my business off years ago in a co-working space, which was really great for me because I was dealing with interns and staff. And, of course, you can't invite all those people to your house.
Right.
And trying to have, you know, significant meetings and needed conference room space and just a lot of things. So the co-working model was amazing for me in the beginning of my career. And just really helped with a lot of things that I was trying to solidify business-wise. And so Atlanta, which was very few and far between on co-working spaces, is now, you know, dominated by it. But it's enough room for everybody because they all have different niches and, you know, appeal to them. So from the WeWork to the gathering spot to, of course, open for business. There's just so many things here, but all of this thriving. It's the market's hungry for it.
That's awesome. So I know that we definitely have some Atlanta listeners. So for the Atlanta listeners, can you tell us specifically where your space is located?
It's located in the Sweet Auburn Avenue district. So the address is 228 Auburn Avenue. So it's right in the heart of downtown.
Fantastic. Now, when was 100 Female Entrepreneurs founded? Was this founded before the co-working space? And can you tell us a little bit about how that came to be?
Sure. So 100 Female Entrepreneurs, it was founded in 2015. And we kicked off of doing this large event at the Capitol on Women's Entrepreneurship Day, and ended up having like thousands of women just showing up in solidarity for, and I would just say more so entrepreneurial minded women. So anywhere from women doing their entrepreneurial ventures full time to lawyers and doctors who kicked off their entrepreneurial projects on the side, and you know, just all of everyone united in regards to trying to create a life that they love and set their life up at their own parameters. So from that, we started to do just a lot of research on what was missing in the market and what was needed, and how we could help push the needle. And we came up with a curriculum format for 100 Female Entrepreneurs that, you know, helps everywhere from jumping out into the world of entrepreneurship all the way to scaling and growing your business to having a membership community, accountability partners, and just a group of women that are all progressive in mindset. Mm,
that's amazing. And, you know, it's crazy because so many people think that when they hear that word entrepreneur, when they hear that word side hustle, they think that it means that you have to be a specific type of person or of a certain mindset, and you cannot be corporate inclined at all. But that's not what it means. And I'm glad that you mentioned that there were women there that were entrepreneurial in terms of full time, as well as there were women there that were just had the mindset where they might have had an interest to do something aside from maybe their 9-to-5 career. So that's important. So today we're going to be talking about how, with you specifically, about how you can monetize via a side hustle and get some ideas of where you can start and how to approach the planning process when thinking of potentially working for yourself. So the first thing I want to talk about is determining your financial worth. And I want to talk about that first because that can play a role in deciding if you want or feel like you might need a side hustle. So what factors go into determining your financial worth when it comes to offering your services in an entrepreneurial capacity or a corporate environment?
I think that you have to really start with analyzing how much value you bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of women in corporate atmospheres and in the entrepreneurial space, so many of us undervalue what we actually bring to the table. And so just like when you're doing your resume, when you first started out in your career journey and you were asked, what are your transferable skills or what are the experiences that you have that might apply to this? It seems like as we get older, for some reason, we feel like that doesn't apply anymore. So you may have worked in one department and excelled at a high amount, but for some reason when another department opening happens, you feel like you're not qualified, but the skill set is the same and you have already shown and proven that you can, you know, rock in that world. So I think that for many of us, it's figuring out the level of value that we bring to the table. What are those uncommon insights that we have? What are those knowledge assets that we possess that can really help move the needle of whatever project or product that's on the table?
Okay. And so getting a bit more specific, once someone figures out what their value is and what they sort of bring to the table, how would you suggest that they go about evaluating that in real life terms, in terms of what they would charge someone? Like, let's say, you know, I know there's different websites that you can do a comparison career I can't even think of the word right now, but like where you can do comparison salaries and things like that. So if there's someone that's maybe doing things that are a little bit non-traditional, but there's obviously some crossover with some skill sets that maybe they learned in a corporate environment or otherwise, how would you suggest that they go about trying to sort of determine what the dollar amount is that goes along with the value and the assets that they bring as a person?
Sure. There's a few different ways that you can go about kind of determining your value. So one, it's breaking it down to a time asset model. So how much time are you dedicating to this project and how much are you worth in that amount of time? So you can look at the going rate across the industry, all the way broken down to your geographic realm, or you can also look through the different sites that you mentioned just to see what is the national standard for what it is you're doing. But then also too, just like when you're getting ready to sell your car, and if it's a used car, but you have new brakes on it, you have new interior, you did some upgrades to it, then that's the same when it comes to your value. If you have some in-depth relationships that can help move the project across quicker, if you have some connections or some vendor opportunities that will make their cost less, all those different things should be added into your price point. So you know how you're watching Shark Tank and it's basically like, hey, I can take your product and invest in it, and outside of the money, I work with whatever network, and they will immediately give you exposure to 1 million+ people. That in itself is added value to it, which is why I'm asking for more percentage of company equity.
Right.
So you just want to make sure that you're analyzing everything that you're bringing to the table and then assessing a dollar amount to that. And then what's also important, too, is so many of us forget to look at our time and the amount of a financial asset. So if you look at this project and you know full off that you're going to give it your all and it's going to be 100+ hours to that, then you should charge accordingly to that as well. What is your hourly or what is your price bundle rate for that, and not shortchanging yourself?
That's amazing advice. Thank you. And I'm glad that you were able to break it down like that, because some people talk about these ideas and concepts like, oh, determining your value and things like that, and they just kind of say it and glaze over it. But it's like, what's underneath that? That's what people want to know. They want to know, how can I really go about doing this and seeing what I'm worth and what I bring to the table? So I appreciate you breaking that down for me. And you mentioned something that's very obvious, I think, among women especially, is that so many of us undervalue our work and our worth and sell ourselves short. Why do you think that is? What's your opinion on that?
I think that some of it's cultural, and I think that in certain communities or whatnot, you've been told from generations ahead of you that you're not supposed to charge but a certain amount. So,
right.
You know, just be grateful for whatever you get. And this is what we get in our community. And don't push yourself past that. So you have some of those generational curses that some women deal with. Then, two, you have a lack of confidence. So if you are in very male-dominated, male-driven industries, then many times you don't get that opportunity to shine, to speak up, to lean in, as they say, or, you know, so many of those other opportunities. And so you are in the space where you get to demand and see your demands being met, because it's met with constant opposition so much. So you have that as well. And then I think access to resources. So it's a complete different thing when you are presenting a proposal and you're able to put all the bells and whistles. I have, on my PR side, I have had the opportunity to pitch with partners, and, you know, the business means so much to them, they'll bring in celebrity talent for it, and, you know, they'll get custom-made proposal pamphlets and everything. They'll bring out all the bells and whistles. And then you have this other small company pitching for the same business that's basically just printed it off at Kinko's mm-hmm. put it in a folder and came. So you have these two people on the same playing field, which that person who, you know, printed off at Kinko's is probably, they're probably way more capable, will give more attention to the product, will give their all to it, their heart, soul, blood, sweat, and tears, mm-hmm. but they feel like, I can't dare ask for what this other company has because of the bells and whistles they're able to bring. So I think lack of resources for so many mm-hmm. women, just being able to step to the same playing field equally right. so that you are able to, you know, command the same dollar.
Right. That makes absolute sense. So what are some of the key steps to, in your opinion, to better communicating your value to your audience or to a potential employer?
I feel like we live in the world of show and prove, mm-hmm. right? There, mm-hmm. I mean, a few years ago, a decade ago, you can say, I did this, I did that. You could package it together very pretty. And people, you know, might actually rock with you.
Right.
But in today's day, it's like, you did what? Okay, let me call this person. Let me make sure you work with them. Mm-hmm.
let me Google the project.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. You produce these type of results. Let me see some type of data collected that shows that you impacted the bottom line. And I need that data from a third party source that, of course, will be non-biased.
Right.
Or, you know, you're saying that you did this. Tell us, walk us exactly through every step that you did so that we know for sure that you really did that and how you achieved those results. And do you feel like it would work for our company? And did you do the research to know why?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not how pretty you can package it type of world anymore. It's not, you know, if you have a good mouthpiece and you can say whatever the right words are, it's show and prove. Everybody wants to know exactly every single penny that they're spending, how will it be a return on investment? And if they spend one penny with you, what are you going to do to be able to show that and to bring that to life? So it's a different world now. If you're in the world of business and you're entrepreneurial in mindset, then mm-hmm. you have to show and prove.
Right. You made me think of this whole concept of influence and being an influencer as you were speaking. So I want to know, what's your thoughts on the whole influencer culture and the idea of being an influencer? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we deal with that a lot. And, you know, it's like a word that everybody starts to cringe now in the marketing space.
Yeah.
Like, oh, gosh, mm-hmm. influencer. It's in everybody's bio. Everyone, you know, because you post a lot on Facebook, you have considered yourself an influencer. All the way to the point that we've gotten away from the true meaning of an influencer, which means that you can actively move your target, your audience to produce a reaction. So, because you have 50 million followers, if you say, hey, 50 million followers, I purchased from Macy's and I want you to do the same, this, you know, program or this activation's on, you know, whatever is on sale. And if you use my code, you'll get this. And out of your 50 million followers, only 2 sales produce from it. Then you just have a bunch of observers in your space.
Right.
Which is another term for that. And you didn't do enough to cultivate your audience to really consider yourself an influencer. So you just have to be very, very careful with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to know your audience and your industry very well. So if you are working in the corporate space, let's just say you're working in communications, and for your corporation, you have to put together something that involves, you know, influencers or whatnot. A celebrity influencer might not move the needle for whatever your product is. If your product is a B2B product, consumers mm-hmm. would never know about it, and a celebrity appeal would do nothing for the end user, then getting a celebrity is a waste of the corporate, you know, monies that were entrusted to you. If you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to figure out how to move your products or get a higher level of exposure for a campaign, and you select a celebrity that does not organically resonate with your audience, mm-hmm. then you just wasted a bunch of money. If you
right.
if you're doing something that talks about organic and natural, and you just hired out Kylie Jenner, then people are going to be like, I don't get it. I don't understand. And you just wasted. I think she charges like, I think right now it's like $100K a post.
Wow.
So that money would just be, you know, down the drain. So, influencer. And then also, too, we talk a lot in the marketing space about micro influencers.
Mm-hmm.
So don't put past the power of micro influencers. If there is, if you have a business or you're working in business and you're dealing with like a local, local reach, and there is a doctor in the community and everyone follows what this doctor is, even if it's these 50 to 100 people, or there's a minister at a church that is really able to galvanize and move the needle in the community, don't look past those people because they can help you reach your bottom line, mm-hmm. given the spirit of the project.
Right. That's some key knowledge. I hope you guys are paying attention to that, because everybody wants to be an influencer or call themselves an influencer, or if they're thinking of switching and maybe having a side hustle and they're thinking like, oh, I have all these followers, that's money, I can do it. But it doesn't always equate to that, like Nicole just explained. So just be mindful of those things when you're kind of deciding whether you're going to switch, pivot, or quit, whether you're going to do a side hustle or not. So what are some of the, speaking of that side hustle, what are some of the initial questions that you think someone should be asking themselves if they're looking to start a side hustle?
I think you have to ask yourself, do you have the systems in place to be able to make money? Mm-hmm. So if this is a side hustle for you, then technology has to be your friend. You cannot risk sacrificing your six-figure paycheck during the day to randomly be answering customer service calls throughout the day. So you have to figure out. Now, if you're trying to go full-time, that's one thing. But if it's a side hustle for you, which I see many people who have amazing, amazing annual salaries and have matched that with their side hustles. Mm. If you have to have the systems in place, and you have to not be afraid to spend. So if your operation, your side hustle, whatever that venture is, requires customer service, you need to outsource that. That needs to be in place before you can start to get ruined by all the negative commentary and I didn't receive this and I mm-hmm. can never get anyone on the phone and all of that. Then that needs to be in place. If you have a strong email platform, then there needs to be automation that's in place. Automation to follow up with customers once purchased, and, you know, immediately sending information over to a fulfillment center if that's what you're doing. Whatever it is, your systems have to be highly organized and in place to really make that side hustle work. And then mm-hmm. you really have to understand making sure you fine-tune your business model. So given that time is not on your side because you're already dedicating 40-plus hours to something else, then maybe figuring out your side hustle should focus a little bit more on how you can make money and maybe not so much what your passion is in the beginning until you have it down to a science on how you can actively make money. So I like to say for those starting out into the world of side hustle, figuring out what are those things in the market that people are already paying for or mm-hmm. already asking for.
Right.
And focusing in those areas so the income is coming in and you're starting to build up and fine-tune how you run a business, which is a lot different than you saying you have a passion for animals and rescuing animals and you're trying to figure out how to live that passion, how to make money, and how to operate systems all at the same time. You kind of shortchange your learning curve.
Right. That makes sense. That makes sense. And everyone has these dreams of working for themselves in this current climate. So if someone has an idea, they've already sort of like thought of what they want to do. They've decided whether it's a passion or whether it's something, like you said, that's maybe of the moment, that they don't have to work so hard to build this product up. How do you suggest that they go about finding or identifying their target market? Because everybody talks about target market. But I feel like it's another one of those things where people listening would want to know, and that are interested in maybe potentially doing like a side hustle. It's like, okay, they're telling me I need to identify my target market, but how do I do that? If I'm someone who's never had to identify a target market before, where do I start?
So starting with, is your idea an extension of yourself? If it is, then you are your target market. So you need to really figure out what are the wants and needs that you have. Mm. And so many people have, when they come up with an idea that's an extension of themselves and they're their own target market, they don't even honor what they would want to see.
Right.
So if I came up with doing an online boutique and I, you know, I'm selling shoes, and I know that I'm not buying, you know, shoes that can break apart on me very quickly and all these things, then, and I'm my own target market, then why would I create this business, buy all of these cheap shoes, and then wonder why they're not selling?
Right.
I wouldn't even buy them myself. So, you know, if it is an extension of you, then by all means, you need to honor what your demands would be. And so many of us are particular, but when it comes to our business, we're like, well, these people should just understand. But you wouldn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like you wouldn't support that business, and you wouldn't understand. So you need to have those same requirements when it comes to your own thing. If your idea is not an extension of you, and you're not necessarily your target market, you're going after a market that you just see a void in, then figure out who 5 people around you, somewhere in your circle, sphere, or just at least someone at cross paths, and sit down and do one-on-one data collection from them. Do an interview process. This is the ideal customer for you. What are your likes? What are your pain points?
Mm-hmm.
What are you struggling with? With this type of product, what product have you loved? What have you hated? When you see commercials for this type of product, what resonates with you and what pisses you off? Like, what, you know, like some commercials I actually sit down and watch, and I'm like, who on earth was behind this commercial? This whole commercial just really pissed me off. So
right.
you know, and so you want to find that out from your audience. Your audience will give you so much more. And if there's not at least 5 people around you that you can get insight from, then you know that you have to spend real deal money to get high level data collection. Like if there's no one in your sphere of friend of a friend of a friend of a friend,
right,
that would be your ideal customer, then you have to pay for the reports, and you have to spend money on the surveys, paid traffic surveys and whatnot, which still costs you less money than putting out something that nobody wants and doesn't wouldn't resonate with anyone.
That's perfect point. Because it's like, you know, you spend the money to know that there will be a return on your investment if your idea, if you already start with thinking that this is a viable business idea. So, yeah.
Exactly. There's a difference between expenses and investment.
Mm.
So if you can see a return on your money, if you know if I spend to do this the right way, I'll, you know, at least get 2-fold back, then that's your investment. If you're just spending just for the sake of spending, then that money's lost. And that is what turns it to be an expense to you.
Yeah. Since we're talking about money, let's shift in this direction. Let's talk about revenue a little bit. So what's a good place to start when you're determining how to set revenue goals for yourself? And this could be for yourself in a business capacity, like working for yourself, or, you know, like obviously revenue is usually like business, but we could also think of it in terms of like professionally, like how would you say someone should start determining how to set their revenue goals?
I would definitely say whether it's entrepreneurial, whether it's corporate, is what is the lifestyle that you want to live and how much does that cost? because the way it boils down to, if you have a certain lifestyle that you want that will make you happy and you're living below it, you're going to always be unhappy. And if you're living above it, then, you know, you feel like you have the best life out here. So you want to start with, what does it cost to afford you the lifestyle that that you would be happy with, and break that down to your bills and your mortgage or your rent and your car payment and your phone bill and everything. And if you know you're a person that has to travel, like traveling is a need for me. I feel like, what am I doing with my life if I don't get on a trip at least a few times a year? And so those are things that you have to put into your overall quality of life expenditure report. It's your own personal report. What does it cost to live the way I want to live? And then that should be your initial, we call that your net, your initial revenue opportunity. And then outside of that, what are your other whys? What are other things that you want to accomplish with your revenue? Is it that you want to make sure your children go to college? That's another revenue goal. And if that's $20,000, then what can I do to knock this $20,000 out? Or is it paying off all your debt? Or, you know, no one wants to make money just to make money. Very, very rare are any of us just sitting in a house full of dollar bills all over, just rolling around in it. Your money is a tool and a process to help you accomplish something. So you need to be honest with yourself as to what are those things you're trying to accomplish. And if it's small, that's fine. Everything doesn't have to change the world. Like, if you're like, listen, I am the fact that this car note is stressing me out month to month, and if I had another $1,000 coming in, this would alleviate 80% of my stress.
Right.
Then that's a revenue goal in itself too. And that, you know, that might be something you're not making with your traditional 9-to-5. So if you figure out how to open this Etsy store or do some photography or whatever that is, then you're still able to reach that revenue goal that alleviates the stress.
Mm-hmm. So in your e-course, and tell us, I want you to tell us a bit about the e-course that you have available, but you talk about key financial indicators, and I want to see if you can tell us a couple of those key financial indicators when establishing a successful business.
At the bottom line, whatever it is that you're giving your time and your energy to, it needs to result in some type of profit increase for you. Mm-hmm. So long gone are the days where, especially us as women, where we feel like you'll sleep when you die, and you know, the life of doing business for yourself is consistent struggle, and you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you're going to be broke, and all those things. Like, those are myths that have died. Like, we all know that's just not the case anymore. So you want to make sure whatever it is that you have a financial plan in place, how to monetize whatever it is that you're doing, and how to grow whatever it is that you're doing. So some indicators that you want to make sure of is that the business idea itself is profitable, so that there's an audience for it. There is an audience that wants to pay for it. And so we always say the essence of your of that magic, that business magic, is creating something you want to offer, but that strongly has appeal for what people want to get. So when you meet in the middle of those two circles, then that's where that business profit magic happens. So you want to make sure that there's an audience there, that this audience is a buying audience and not a looking audience. And that is in place. Then, two, you want to make sure that you have the knowledge and ability to move the needle or push this operation forward. And then next, you want to understand that you can manage money, that you have an understanding of cash flow. So for years, I've been in a service-oriented business. And then when I switched over to having a brick and mortar, cash flow means something completely different.
Like, right.
When your bills are coming out, when people are paying, and those different things need to be managed accordingly, because a few things could be off and completely throw off your month. So understanding how to manage your money too, there's there's people who know how to go out and get the money. There's people who know how to manage the money. If you can have both of those, then you put yourself, you give yourself your highest level of profit potential.
Right. You winning. At that point, you really are winning. So we've talked a lot about, you know, financials, and we've talked about what it takes sort of to get set yourself up and know you're in the right space to move forward. And like I mentioned, you've been in business, and like you've mentioned, you've been in business for a long time. What's one of the missteps that you've taken in business and learned like a significant lesson from?
For me, I think your reputation is everything. Whether you're climbing a corporate ladder or whether you're in entrepreneurship, your reputation is everything. And one thing you'll always notice, no matter what journey you're on, is the people that were below you at some point will be above you.
Huh.
And that cycle continues throughout the rest of life. So your assistant will, you know, they leave the job, they get a better offer, and next thing you know, you're both sitting at a table having to figure out how to do business together.
Right.
Or your former intern is now the communications director for some fashion house, and you need those fashions for a client you're working with. It's such a cycle that I know for a fact you cannot afford to ever burn a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
If you plan on operating in the world of commerce or operating in the world of business.
Right.
And that doesn't mean everybody has to be your bestie and your best friend. And there's power in having differences of thought and, you know, diversity and work style. It's some women that you respect greatly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hold in high regard. But you can never see yourself going out for drinks or
right.
ever, you know, having that moment with them.
Right.
But the respect factor is there. So I think that, you know, if you just start out in business or if you have an old school mindset where I'm the boss and I'm the queen and, you know, this is how it's going to be, I think either one of those mindsets can hold you back, because the way that this world works is you just never know. And that's the funny thing about it. Whereas corporate used to be so stable and you have to have a certain amount of years in the game,
mm-hmm.
now it's all about millennials and youth and fresh energy. So that intern can quickly become the head of social media for, you know, any department and
mm-hmm.
be your counterpart as very quickly.
Right.
So I would definitely say in business, that's just something you have to know.
Yeah, because things change, and the way the trajectory for someone's career could be unforeseen to you and to them, you know, because it might be that they have what this person or this company needs, and then you add in the factor with these startups, and startups don't really care about, you know, how many years you've been doing something. As long as you do it better than everybody else, they want you. You know, they want to tap into that talent, skill level. So you got to pay attention to those things. And one thing that you may me think of as you were talking is that I know when I was at the NBA, there was like this spoken sometimes if it needed to be spoken, but it was definitely an unspoken thing too, where you answered all emails. It didn't matter. It didn't matter if you knew them or not. It didn't matter if it sounded like a wonky request and you're like, what the hell are they talking about? It didn't matter. You answered every email because you didn't know who was on the other side of that email. And God forbid you don't answer an email and a call comes in from David Stern's office, because he was the commissioner at the time. And it's like, so-and-so, I suggested that so-and-so email you and they said you never got back to them.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, you that's like you mm-hmm. want to crawl under your desk and die,
mm-hmm.
really, because
mm-hmm.
you don't want his wrath on you about something especially so simple. And I laugh now because you find so many people that are so busy, so busy, so busy. They claim to be so busy that they can't even respond to a simple email with maybe even a yes or no. And to me,
uh-huh.
I'm like, guess what? There's a lot of people out there who are 10 times busier than you. you know, but they find the time and they manage to respond to people and to at least acknowledge people. And to me, that goes a long way too, because you never know who's on the other side of that email. Just like you said, that same person that's emailing you, asking you a simple question right now, or maybe not even asking anything of you, just reaching out, that may be someone that you meet in the future. And then they realize and recognize you kind of shaded them. You kind of ghosted them, or you never responded to them. And then it's up to them, depending on what type of person they are, how they're going to act toward you. You don't know. But if you're in a position where you need them, I hope they're a good person. You know,
and that's when it boils down to having your systems in place and understanding how to prioritize too.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when it boils down to being able to answer people, there are millionaires and billionaires who have that at least that 5 minute rule. At least I can give you 5 minutes.
Yep.
I'm a very busy person. It's a lot going on. So, you know, we might can't have an hour long talk or whatever, but I have a hard stop at 4 minutes and 59 seconds,
right.
But I could at least give you the 5 minutes, and people will always remember that at least you can give me that. And you can use technology to help filter out emails and, you know, populate things at the top and, you know, give generic responses when needed. So at least mm-hmm. there's an appearance of, you know, some type of feedback. I mean, you can, if you want to excel, it's really on you. It's enough out there to help you do it.
Yep. Absolutely agree. So let's get into Nicole, the woman, a bit more, because we've talked a lot about business and we know that you are absolutely a businesswoman who has sustained for many years. So do you have a morning routine?
I do. So I tried in the beginning. I definitely tried to do the Tony Robbins routine
mm-hmm.
with everything that he does. And because I just felt like he's just such a beast. Like he's
right.
so focused on achieving excellence day in mm-hmm. and day out. But what I realized what works for me is, one, I don't do well with any negative information or levels of stress early in the morning.
Mm.
After noon and all the way into the night, I can handle it. But if my day starts off like that, it can change the trajectory of my day. So I don't check emails first thing in the morning. Whereas for some people, they do. But I don't check emails first thing in the morning. I kind of get my vision together for the day, map out everything, look at my calendar, see what's on the plate, organize and put things in place so that I'm ahead of everything. So like today with this interview, I made sure that I had my notes already in place. I knew that what the bulk of our conversation was going to be on.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have that level of stress when it was time. Like, oh my gosh, it's time for me to call in. What's the number? Where did
right.
I play it? What are we talking about again? Oh, I'm trying to look up my email. What that,
right.
that type of stress, like over and over years, is what you start to impede upon your quality of life. So
mm-hmm.
I move everything. As soon as I get stuff, I put it in my calendar. I send calendar invites to myself as well as whoever else is involved.
Mm-hmm.
I give myself all types of hacks and cheat notes to whatever it is I need, you know,
yep.
what is this about? What are we doing? Everything to prepare me to execute at my highest level so I could just be without, like, all the extra stress, because that'll
yeah.
take you out.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any tips for navigating life changes, career changes, whether it be expected changes or unexpected? Because, you know, there's a lot of people that don't do very well with change, or they're apprehensive about change. So do you have any tips?
I think you have to, at one point or another in life, if you're operating in the world of business, you have to become very, very comfortable with the idea of change, because it's inevitable.
Hmm.
And I think you have to identify where the fear comes from. So the fear for some people could come from, if things change, then I'm no longer valued. If that's a possibility, then what are you doing to increase your value prior to?
Right.
So do you remember on the movie Hidden Figures when they started to see that computers were going to be the new wave of the future?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, well, instead of us sitting around and figuring out how we can you know, increase our asset. Let's get on the computers. Let's be at the front of that trend because they're going to need somebody to work them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, apprehension with change sometimes comes from people, you know, people no longer needing you or you're not feeling needed. So figure out what else you can do to feel needed. And then mm-hmm. two, the uncertainty comes with that too. So what are you doing to make sure that you understand the trends in your industry and, you know, where things are going? There's so many people that I still find it ridiculous that now, even now, they're like, I'm not into social media. I really don't get it. I don't. And social media is becoming the currency of information exchange from the highest level. By the time you have a president that's communicating his thoughts daily on Twitter to commerce being run through Instagram to algorithms and thought processes of human insight being taken from Facebook. I don't think it's not even optional for you not to hop into the world of social media. And those archaic mindsets is what keeps you behind. I love, my father is a great, great representation of staying relevant. Like he is in his 70s, and he will definitely send me an email like, this new app is out, and it's helping me do this. Have you heard of that? And I'm like, what?
He knows more than you do. I love that.
Dad. People would be like, how did you find out? I'd be like, my dad. Like,
he keeps you on your toes.
He does. He refuses to go into this world of isolation and not knowing what's happening in society. And the information is too easy to retrieve. Like, you sign up for a few things that are not gossip-based, but more informational. You sign up to Mashable, TechCrunch, any of those things, Google Insights, whatever it is. Get a few of those things in your inbox, and you will stay ahead. At least you'll keep up with the curve. And I think that you owe that to yourself, and that makes you less scared of change because you already know what's coming down the pike.
I actually talked about that on a podcast a couple weeks ago. I was just talking about, I read this, or Anderson Cooper did this thing about brain hacking, Silicon Valley and everything. And I also read this other article that just made me think, like, you know, you need to know what's going on behind the scenes in your business, or at least in a business, an area of business that you're dabbling in or you're somewhat in. Because if you don't know, and if you're not paying attention, there's things that you're going to miss and you're going to be left behind, and you're going to be thinking that status quo is something that has long since gone. You know, but you'll still be, you know, operating at a lower level. And it just gives you, when you're tuned into, like you said, being on some of these magazines, like their email lists or some websites that really offer daily good content, then it allows you to also, it allows you to compete with your competitors. It allows you to inform your peers so that you're a person that seems like you know what you're talking about. And you know what? Now that I think about it, we probably think like this, Nicole, because of the PR background. Because in PR, you have to always be up on news. You have to be paying attention to what's going on, especially if you are servicing in a client capacity. Because don't let a client email you about something that you should have emailed them about first and notified them of. So So that's something that you guys out there listening, just try to implement that in your world, that you want to be a person that's a source of information and a source of knowledge, and someone that if somebody comes across something and they're like, oh, this is cool, I wonder does XYZ know about it, and they're asking you because you are typically the person that would know about these things. You're typically the person that would have inside information or have heard about it before everyone else, or, you know, potentially. So be that person. Work on being that person. And that's a skill set to have in itself if you can always kind of be that go-to person.
Totally agree.
Yeah. So can you tell us, speaking of those types of things, what you think has contributed to your ability to stay in business for yourself for so long?
I think I never got comfortable. I think that And that can go in no matter what profession, industry, or whatever route you're taking.
Right.
I always see that people seem to not be able to bounce back once they get comfortable. And even though I've been in business this long, I can't say that, you know, life doesn't hit me at least every couple years where, you know, a large client that has a budget freeze or, you know, just things you weren't planning for. So my level, I had to have the quickest level of bounce back humanly possible in some of those instances. And I was able to because I never got comfortable. I was always like, you know, these are potential things that could happen. So my financial reserve is always in place. I never lived outside of my means so that I, you know, I could get caught off guard with that. I strongly, strongly believe in investing and saving to build my portfolio. Having multiple streams of income has been a great opportunity for me because every industry is not going to thrive all the time. Many industries have cycles. So if this cycle is on its bottom side of it, and I have two other ventures that are on the top of their cycle, I'm still good to go. So it's really just understanding that you can't just relax in the world of business. Like, it's always changing. It's always moving, and you have to be at the top of that.
That is perfect advice, okay? I hope you guys were taking notes on that one. Because that's a something that a lot of people have trouble with is just longevity and staying around. They have a great idea, but they're here today, gone tomorrow. So I know that you mentioned early on that the work that you do with 100 female entrepreneurs, it started in a very supportive and uplifting environment in that, and you realized that there was like a need for this. So what role does women supporting women play in your life, and how important is that to you?
Well, our tagline, what we like to say with 100 female entrepreneurs is that there's strength in numbers. And I know for a fact, like, there's so many new heights and revenue opportunities and project opportunities when it comes to collaboration. And I have never, ever been afraid to play in the sandbox with whoever I could to achieve greatness together. So if you can get $5 by yourself, but you can get $50,000 with somebody else, then why would you, you know, not take that route just to say that you did it alone? It's never been something I've been able to comprehend. And when you look outside, when you look at men and you look at, you know, the way they come together and they leave the emotional pieces out of it, it helps them in many realms to be able to get bigger projects and move each other up the corporate ladder and, you know, so many of those types of things. So I definitely feel like a community and collaboration of people wanting to push each other further, where your win is just as important as my win, because we all have to win together, is just a necessity at this point.
Absolutely. Preach. So you've rubbed elbows with a ton of wonderful women, speaking of collaboration and just being in proximity with greatness, including many celebrities. And you've had celebrity clients and everything else on the PR side. Do you have any tips for relationship building?
That it has to be organic. I feel like it has to be organic. And you can never go into any relationship trying to figure out what can you get out of it. It's what can you give to it. When you give and pour into it and you're of value to the other person, then organically those things will start to happen. It's very rare that people succeed being takers or users or opportunists with negative ambitions and goals. You definitely want to make sure that you're pouring into it. I have a good friend of mine who is a self-made millionaire, and to this day, she honors her mentor so much. Her mentor will fly to Atlanta, and before she even lets her mentor press an Uber button, she'll come out there and pick her up, and she validates spending that quality time with her mentor, even if it's just you know, driving her to her hotel or, you know, knowing mm-hmm. her mentor is going to be very busy, that at least that bit of downtime, she gets that insight and that reflection. But she's offering something to her. She's not having this yeah. expectation of, why can't you come meet me somewhere? Or why can't you do this for me? Or, you know, I just don't understand. It's from, like, what can I do for you? And in that space, you'll be blessed accordingly. And then also when it comes to relationships, it's not going to click with everyone. You can't force it.
Right.
You know, it's a space where people get into this social media admiration, and when they meet the person, they want them to automatically be their mentor, automatically let's go into business together, or, you know, let's do this and do that. But you can't force it. It's online makes you feel like you can speed up that human interaction, but mm-hmm. it still has to be some vibe there.
Right.
Like you guys have to get along in some type of way. And if you don't, then you can admire that person and their acts from afar, but it just might not be meant for you to work with them. But that doesn't mean God won't place other people in your life that will help you get to the level of excellence that's meant for your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nicole, this has been such a great conversation. Like you just have a wealth of knowledge. And as you guys listening probably already know, like she has way more goodies to offer, especially through her courses and whatnot. So tell our listeners tell them a little bit about the Make Me Money online course. And mm-hmm. Make Me More Money online course, excuse me, as well as where they can keep up with you.
Sure. So the Make Me More Money course is for those who are just entrepreneurial in mindset. So you could either be doing your entrepreneurial venture full time, or it could be a side venture to complement what you're doing in the corporate space. From teaching you everything from cash flow management to how to get more of your ideal client to how to really figure out what your profit model is and your different paths to profiting. So many different things are included in that course. And they were things that I saw a lot of women in business were struggling with. So it is available. You can go to the website, makememore.money, or you can go to our overall organization website, which is 100femaleentrepreneurs.com. And if you are interested in following or getting more information, my personal social media handle is I Am Garner Scott, and that's for Nicole Garner Scott. And for 100 Females is at 100 Females. And we also, I was telling you, we got to get listed in your directory. But we have a podcast too that's called Make Me More Money, where we bring on women to transparently talk about finances, women, anything money. And then what we started to notice is that there was starting to be these facades of how people were actually getting their money through social media. But we bring them on the show to say, well, how are you really making this work? Like how, you know, like we know that you didn't just have this lifestyle, this beautiful lifestyle on Instagram without so many things going into making that happen. So could you tell our audience how that really transpired? And so far, all the women have been exceedingly and openly transparent in all the information they're given.
That's amazing, because that's what people really want to know. It's like, it's good to see the outside and see the prettiness and everything, but they want to know, how did you get there? What did it take? Because the other thing is, they need to determine, am I built for that? If I think I want what you have or something similar, am I built like you are? Do I really want to go through and sacrifice what it takes to get there? If not, okay, now I know. That's not for me. So, yeah, that you guys definitely need to check out the podcast. And thank you so much, Nicole, for joining us today. Thank you so much for blessing us with all of your wisdom. And as always, you guys, keep killing it.